WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today's Monday, July 24th, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. The FBI has released a document with more details about the Biden's lucrative influence peddling racket. On Friday, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa released an FBI FD 1023 form that includes detailed allegations against Hunter and Joe Biden. The form describes meetings with Ukrainian officials, including the CEO of Burisma, Mykola Zlochevsky. It turns out that Zlochevsky is a Ukrainian oligarch who said he made 17 recordings of Hunter and Joe Biden and who's also saved text messages of his shady dealings with the Bidens. Zlochevsky told the FBI informant that he was careful not to send any money directly to the big guy. He said he paid $5 million apiece to Hunter and Joe Biden to protect his business interests, to make certain that Ukrainian prosecutor Viktor Shokin, who was investigating corruption at Burisma, would be dealt with. According to the document, the informant said the meeting happened when Joe Biden made a public statement about prosecutor Shokin being corrupt and that he should be fired from office. The informant told Zlochevsky that because of Shokin's investigation into Burisma, which had been made public at the time, it would have a negative impact on Burisma's prospective IPO in the U.S. Zlochevsky then said something to the effect of, "Don't worry, Hunter will take care of all those issues through his dad." During the same discussion, the informant suggested to Zlochevsky that he simply deal with Ukrainian officials in court. But the Ukrainian oligarch admitted that he could not show Burisma was innocent and added that it cost $5 million apiece to pay one Biden and $5 million to pay another. Zlochevsky also said that his dog was smarter than Hunter, but he needed to retain the latter's services so everything will be okay. When the informant again advised Zlochevsky to sever ties with the Bidens to prevent the scandal from becoming international, the Burisma CEO said he appreciated the advice, but that it was already too late to change his decision. The informant interpreted this to mean that he had already bribed the Bidens to make the Viktor Shokin problem go away. Shokin was fired in March 2016. According to those involved in the investigation, there is much more to come, including new countries that were involved in the Biden influence peddling racket and possibly tens of millions of dollars more in bribes. So join me to discuss today's stories is TNA senior editor Rebecca Terrell. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Paul. It's great to see you. How are you?
Good. Hey, so all these stories, we've obviously been on top of this, but one thing that nobody seems to be mentioning, at least when it comes to reporting media and that we haven't seen a whole lot of, is a lot of this happened, obviously, while Joe Biden was vice president to Barack Obama. Surely Obama must have known that this was happening. At some point, do you think that that'll ever come up? Have you seen anything?
Well, you know, I want to point out first that there, you know, Zlochevsky, I can't ever say his name correctly, but when he refers to Joe Biden, he refers to Hunter's dad. But elsewhere he refers to the big guy. So, you know, he doesn't shy away from referring to Joe Biden directly as Hunter's dad. And he also says that he's not going to make any payments directly to the big guy, but he references $5 million payments made directly to Joe Biden. So that would kind of indicate that maybe the big guy is somebody else. And this speculation is running wild on social media. I've got one thing that I pulled up and I haven't been able to verify exactly where this came from. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. But it says evidence of $10 million in bribes from Burisma to the Obama/Bidens for policy decisions by their administration is confirmed in documents and testimony of U.S. agents. Yet thuggish media remains silent while government operatives work overtime to cover up the crimes. So, again, I haven't verified the source of that, but it is just speculation. It's running crazy over social media. Everybody's like, oh, there's no way that Obama isn't the big guy. So that's just public, whatever, for what it's worth, public opinion.
The plot thickens. It just makes some sort of sense that he had at least some sort of knowledge, but you never know. He could be. I haven't heard that one yet, but you never know. We'll see what happens.
Context clues.
There you go. All right, let's move to our next story. Federal agents have charged a former Democrat state legislator from New Hampshire with child sexual exploitation in connection with his arrest on child porn charges. Former state representative Stacey Marie Lawton allegedly possessed child pornography. Court documents also say he discussed raping very young children who were under the supervision of his girlfriend, who was working at a daycare. As those of you watching the show can see, Lawton happens to be a man pretending to be a woman, or as the degenerate opinion cartel want us to call him, a trans woman. According to the charging document, Lawton's girlfriend Lindsay Groves sent him child porn. Police have arrested Groves as well. She's charged with one count of sexual exploitation of children and one count of distribution of child pornography. A forensic review of Groves' cell phone allegedly revealed over 10,000 text messages between Lawton and Groves that included discussion about and transfer of explicit photographs that Groves took of children while employed at Creative Minds Daycare. The text messages included multiple sexually explicit images of children who appear to be about 3 to 5 years old, as well as explicit descriptions of sex with small children. In addition to pretending to be a woman, it turns out that Lawton also pretends to be a minister. The video you're watching is one which he posted on YouTube 5 months ago. In it, he delivers a so-called sermon called Praise Him in the Darkness. Lawton and Groves each face at least 15 years in jail. This is just another reminder of how intensely our children are being targeted. Tim Ballard is the founder of Operation Underground Railroad, which rescues children from sex trafficking rings. Before that, he worked as a special agent in the Department of Homeland Security as an undercover cop for the U.S. Child Sex Tourism Jump Team. Here he is talking to Jordan Peterson just before the movie based on his rescue operations, The Sound of Freedom, was released to the public.
I call spiritual warfare. Children are targeted like never before. I was on the Capitol Hill last week, and this congressman was telling me, how do we wake people up to the fact that all these unaccompanied minors are being shoved into America and we don't know where they are? And I said, well, your problem is you're not connecting all the dots, all the ways in which children are being hurt. Not only these 85,000 missing children that are now in the belly of the largest potentially child sex market in the world. But at the same time that's happening, you have groups trying to get rid of the name pedophile and call them minor attracted persons. At the same time, you're sexualizing children, giving them what I used to be able to arrest you for giving children. Now teachers in California and other states are giving this in the name of liberating children sexually or sex education. And now a 13-year-old can consent to gender mutilation and have themselves injected with all sorts of chemicals that might ruin their reproductive system. Well, what are you doing? Consent to do that equals consent eventually to sex with a 50-year-old pedophile. And so if you got to connect all these things. And so I, for the first time in my life, Jordan, I'm looking at the United States of America and I'm saying, look, I used to think I might be out of a job because we eradicated human trafficking. I am now thinking I might be out of a job because the very laws that protect children and allow us to go after their captors are being and will be decaying and eroded with this crazy culture that is taking children in the name of liberating them and in fact is enslaving them.
Wow, Rebecca, what a strong testimony. He's clearly onto something, and it doesn't take a genius to find out that this is where it's going.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's important to point out that that Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which was developed, I believe, by the U.S. Army back in the 1950s when it first came out, homosexuality was on the list. And eventually, over time, it's gotten more and more politically correct to where, like he said, now the things that he used to be able to arrest people for are being advocated by even schools, which is just absolutely heinous. We have to remember that biblical mandate from the book of Matthew, chapter 18, verse 6, I believe it is, where Jesus said, beware to any of these who scandalize these little ones. It would be better if a millstone were tied around their necks and they were thrown into the ocean. That actually was an ancient Greek punishment for sacrilege, for the crime of sacrilege. Now, remember, that was from a pagan culture. That wasn't from a Christian culture. He was invoking that and likening the scandal involving little ones to sacrilege, which is a sin directly against God himself. So our Lord takes this seriously, And we need to start taking it seriously. There can't be any compromise. And when people say, pull your kids out of public school, this is what you're saving them from, because it is here. It is real.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is a, they don't have any studies at, well, they may, but I'm not I haven't come across them, but there was an old study from 2002 by Dr. Timothy Daly. And what back then they found a link between homosexuality and pedophilia. I imagine it'd be only a matter of time, or it probably already exists. And I imagine the link is even stronger, that being one between trans people and pedophilia.
Right, exactly. I think that it's something like a third of child sex crimes involve homosexuals or cross-dressers, mm-hmm. or the L, like you said, LMNOP, all the letters that apply to them. But absolutely, there. I mean, we're talking about people who, we have to remember at its core, and Tim Ballard mentioned this is a spiritual warfare. Of course, Satan is out to remove all innocence from our society. And of course, his focus would be children. We look down our noses at these pagan cultures like the Aztecs, I think it was, who were into child sacrifice to the gods. Well, what do we have here in our country? We have abortion, that's sacrificing children. Now we have all of this gender mutilation that he mentioned, the grooming of children, the child sex trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, we're not any better than those Aztecs who would sacrifice their children to gods.
Well, and the most interesting part of that was, he was talking about, he's like, I had this job and I used to be able to arrest people for what the things that they're doing in schools now, being obviously that pornography they're bringing. We have eroded, we have deteriorated so intensely, and now they're coming for the kids. They have been coming for the kids, but now it's just blatant. People better wake up, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And you know, the way to hit them is in the pocketbook. Pull your kids out of public schools. The public schools will be defunded.
Yeah.
They won't be able to go on.
Absolutely. There's no chance of reform. And we've already been through this. So we actually encourage viewers and listeners to go to jbs.org, where we have more information on that. Thanks, Rebecca. Well, hey, folks. The John Birch Society is hosting our annual leadership conference this coming September. This year, we'll be gathering in Des Moines, Iowa. We'll be discussing effective strategies you can use in your activism, and we'll bring plenty of tools that you can take back home with you. This will also be a great opportunity for us to meet you and for you to meet like-minded patriots who are also working to restore America. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Ryan Cole, whose discussion topic will be the death of science, medical freedom in an era of lies. James Patrick, the film director of the movie Nitrogen 2000, will also be there. And on Friday, we'll be doing dinner and watching his movie. Former Iowa U.S. Congressman Steve King will join us as well, as will renowned physicist and election expert Dr. Douglas Frank. The New American's Alex Newman will be there, and he'll be discussing how climate change is used to scare and control people. And that's just a brief summary of everything that will be happening over those 2 days. Visit jbs.org and learn more about the Leadership Conference. You can also get tickets there, and you, or at jbs.org, or you can call 1-800-527-8721. But hurry up before the ticket window closes. Again, you can get your tickets at jbs.org or call 1-800-527-8721. And stay tuned, because after the break, we'll be back with more New American TV.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
Welcome back, folks. So last week, New American senior editor Alex Newman briefly caught up with Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy at Camp Constitution, a patriotic Christian family camp in New Hampshire. Time was limited, and Ramaswamy was rushing off to his next campaign stop in the state that holds the nation's first presidential primary. So Alex immediately began asking the tough questions, and Vivek's answers may surprise you, including his response that there are good reasons to exit the UN. Here's a short interview.
All right, so Vivek, let's just go right to the really tough questions. A lot of people are talking about the World Economic Forum, that you were a young global leader. I know you've said that there was some confusion there. Could you tell us what's your stance on the World Economic Forum?
I've been the number one opponent to the World Economic Forum's agenda in the United States of America. I don't think there's a single American who has done more to fight their agenda than I have. Starting a company to compete against the ESG industrial complex, one that's succeeded, written two out of my three books on that. The irony is that they put my name on their list without getting any consent to do it. I respectfully told them I declined their award. They refused to listen, so I sued them. I believe in taking action. I tend to win when I do. And the same thing with respect to any of these other globalist agendas. There's been no, I think there's been nobody else in the country in the last 4 years before this was popular that even exposed what was happening. And I understand how that game is played. I expose it, but now I'm fighting against it.
So what are your thoughts on the Great Reset that the World Economic Forum is pushing?
Well, the Great Reset is the old world monarchy rearing its head again. And I say the response to the Great Reset is the Great Uprising. That is what we're leading. The Great Reset says we need to dissolve the boundaries between the public sector and the private sector to do through the back door what governments couldn't do through the front door. The Great Uprising says, no. We, the people, decide how we sort out our differences as citizens of nations. I stand on the side of the Great Uprising. My last book was all about exactly how that works. This campaign is about translating that into action. And that's why I don't believe in, I think there's other good-hearted Republicans who believe in reform. I don't believe in reform. I believe in revolution. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a moment that calls for revolution, not reform, because reform is not going to get it done.
Fantastic. So what do we do with, like, the United Nations, for example? Biden just rejoined a bunch of UN agencies, including UNESCO. Trump got us out of several of them. What do we do with the UN?
This will make a lot of people mad. I think there are good reasons to exit the UN. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have the Human Rights Commission staffed by representatives from Venezuela and North Korea, it has become a farce and a hollowed-out husk. So it should have been a task force, like so many of our government agencies here at home. It's now become a permanent institution. The things that should have been task forces become permanent institutions. That's a mistake. And so I'm shutting down the administrative state at home, but I'm going to do the same thing with respect to these supposed multilateral international institutions abroad as well.
Fantastic. One more question for you.
The last one, then we got the parade here.
America, of course, was founded on Christian biblical principles. What are your thoughts on the Bible and Christianity as it relates to governance and the American heritage?
There's no doubt our Constitution was made for a moral people. I love young people celebrating our country in this way. I personally share those values deeply. And I think we need to be unapologetic about reviving those ideals as well. Many of the Republicans are squeamish about it. Not me. I think that the importance of talking about faith in our culture is very important.
Check out this parade.
Okay, thank you.
Wow, Rebecca, I liked how Alex chased him down and he got that interview. That's how you do reporting there. I did find it interesting that apparently his explanation on the WEF's getting Ramaswamy on the Young Global Leader list, and he's saying it's a mistake. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, he is suing the WEF, and WEF has come out and said, oh, our bad, that was our bad. He's suing for $2,500, which is kind of an odd amount. Yeah. But you know, there's so much speculation right now running wild on social media. Of course, in this post-COVID world, everybody's paranoid, and I think for good reason. We should be. But there are a lot of questions that are coming out about that. Like, for instance, the World Economic Forum Young Global Leaders. That is a long, drawn-out process to be named to that list, to that very exclusive list. You have to be nominated and nominated again, and you have to fill out a questionnaire and application that you actually submit, and then there's a long voting process. So it's kind of like, I see why there's a lot of speculation about this. Okay, so he's suing and WEF is now saying, oh, our bad. But, you know, there are a lot of other things that are circulating through social media. Like, for instance, Ramaswamy wants to raise the voting age to 25. Well, where's the respect for the Constitution there? He actually supports Mark Meckler and the Convention of States, which is calling for a constitutional convention. So where's the respect for the Constitution there? A lot of questions. And because people people have these legitimate questions. We are pursuing, we're working on getting a more extensive interview, a sit-down interview in studio with Vivek Ramaswamy. So I just encourage everybody to stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely working on that. And now it's time for the New American TV's weather report, or rather, our expose of faulty weather reporting. This month has witnessed some hysterical forecasts. July 3rd was supposedly the hottest day in 125,000 years. A record heat wave is allegedly sweeping the globe. And the latest fright comes to us courtesy of eco-alarmists at the European Space Agency. They're claiming that some areas are facing the hottest temperatures ever recorded in Europe, with readings expected to climb above 118 degrees Fahrenheit. Pierre Gosselin of the No Tricks Zone blog exposed the chicanery in that ESA report. He wrote, "Meant here were not the standard temperatures recorded at 2 meters above ground level that we always hear in daily weather reports, which are much cooler, but rather those right at the ground surface. It doesn't take a climate scientist to know that there's a big difference between air and surface temperatures. Who hasn't heard the expression, hot enough to fry an egg on the sidewalk? In fact, according to Smithsonian Magazine, July 4th is not just our National Independence Day, it's also the odd distinction of being National Fry an Egg on the Sidewalk Day. Who knew? Yet for those who might be unfamiliar with this annual observance, or more importantly, the difference between air and surface temperatures, here's a handy table from the University of Georgia's College of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences. Notice that when the air temperature reaches 95 degrees Fahrenheit, cement can climb to 125 and blacktop can hit 140. Even grass in the sun will register 105 degrees. So when Germany's alternative media broadcaster Achtung Reichelt blew the whistle on this shameless sleight of hand, major media backpedaled. Sort of. Gosselin cites German media outlet Reloisches Spiegel as one example, which altered its online report without fully explaining the change. The original headline read, "Up to 48 degrees expected in southern Europe," and the article warned of impending deaths from the heat. The next day, the same article specified that the 48-degree forecast applied to ground temperature. The prediction of deaths was curiously absent and replaced by an admission that the air temperatures could be significantly lower. But didn't we know to expect this alarmist reporting? Let's not forget the fantastic bit of guerrilla journalism pulled off by Project Veritas in 2021. They caught CNN's technical director, Charlie Chester, admitting that climate change is his network's ongoing fail-safe scam. Listen to this.
Once the public will be open to it, we're going to start focusing mainly on climate like global warming, and like our focus was to get Trump out of office, right? Without saying it, that's what it was, right? So our next thing is going to be for climate change awareness. Climate thing is going to take years, so they'll probably be able to milk that for quite a bit, you know?
So climate change overload.
Be prepared, it's coming.
Well, Rebecca, I think what that story highlights there is how important it is for citizen journalists to come out and show the lies that the major media is reporting, huh? What's your take on that?
Absolutely. Again, you know, I like to look at what people are talking about on social media, and nobody's falling for this. You know, even the statue that they put up of Greta Thunberg over in the UK at a university there, it's been vandalized so much that they're actually moving it to a more protected spot. So people aren't falling for this. They're not appreciating the fact that we're being threatened with having our gas stoves taken away, and what now, dishwashers and hot water heaters and all this. It's starting to hit people that, oh, this is affecting our daily lives. And you know what? I want to point out too, last year we reported, in April of last year, we reported about an $8 million grant funded by five left-wing foundations that's being awarded over a three-year period. So we're in year number two now. And the purpose of that grant is to expand major media's coverage of climate change alarmism. And one of the five foundations that's funding that grant is the Quadrivium Foundation, founded by James Murdoch. He's a Council on Foreign Relations member. He is the son of Rupert Murdoch, who is the founder of Fox News and also a CFR member. So, you know, and Quadrivium partners with the Clinton Foundation and also with BlackRock to fund green energy initiatives. So, you know, and then you have the list of usual suspects funding that $8 million grant, the Rockefeller Foundation, the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and then others are, the Rockefeller and Hewlett are joined by the Ford Foundation. They've been funding the New York Times, and it actually has a climate change initiative called Headway. And that's been going on since 2020. So we have all of this left-wing, huge, these huge foundations funding this on purpose, this alarmism that is just meant to push this. And ultimately what they're going for, as we know, is depopulation.
Is that what this is about?
That's what all roads lead to Malthusian economics. There's only a short supply, scarce supply on this earth, and we've got to get rid of people.
Yeah, this, I think, highlights, and you got to wonder, like, how many times has this happened? It reminded me, watching this clip, reminded me of Stephen Koonin's interview. He worked under the Obama administration, and one of the things he had mentioned is that when the climate alarmists say, you know, it's been the hottest and this or whatever, what they do is they take a little section here, and they don't actually show the full picture. And all he said was basically, when you look at the bigger patterns over hundreds of years or even the last 100 years, it doesn't show anything what they're saying in the show. You know, his synopsis, his summary was that, you know, climate ebbs and flows. And that's essentially,
and it's not new. It's not new. Back in 1987, they formed the Environmental Grantmakers Association to do this. So this has been going on a long time.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rebecca. That's all for our news segment today, folks. For more Truth Behind the News, make sure to get a subscription to the New American Magazine. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com. Or you can call our office at 800-727-8783 Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. And stay tuned, because we'll be right back with more New American TV.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper, and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
Next up, Gary Benoit interviews senior editor Alex Newman about his cover story, BlackRock, Masters of the Universe, in the New American's July 31st print edition. With an estimated $10 trillion under management, BlackRock has tremendous clout, and it's using that clout to change the world. But as Alex points out, not for the better. Here it is.
The financial monolith known as BlackRock has an estimated $10 trillion under management. It's using its clout to change the world, but not for the better. Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit. And today we have with us Alex Newman, senior editor of the New American Magazine. Alex, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thank you so much, Gary.
Well, thank you, Alex. And of course, we invited you on because you wrote a tremendous cover story for the July 31st issue entitled BlackRock, Masters of the Universe. And where I'd like to start, Alex, is with the cover, because the cover shows a giant globe-straddling vampire squid. I guess the question is this, do you think some people will see that as over the top?
What if they do? It's only because they haven't read the article yet.
No, and I agree.
Matt Taibbi, he wrote an article for Rolling Stone back in 2010 where he referred to Goldman Sachs as that great vampire squid with its face wrapped around the face of humanity, constantly shoving its, I think he called it a blood funnel, into anything that smells like money. And I thought, wow, that's some really powerful imagery. That's really good. But then you look at who owns Goldman Sachs, and the biggest stakeholder is actually BlackRock. So as I point out in the article, BlackRock really is way more powerful than the vampire squid Goldman Sachs. It is the leader of the vampire squids, if you will. Now, BlackRock also owns major stakes in not just Goldman Sachs, but most of the mega banks that people can think of, along with its competitors. And when you own that size of a stake, I think people say, well, they only own 5% or they only own 10%. You know, that doesn't give them control of the company. Yes, it does, because your average investor is not going to be voting at every shareholder meeting. They're not going to be doing the research to find out what each member of the board of directors represents. But BlackRock does those things. And so by owning that large of a stake, BlackRock is really able to exercise a tremendous amount of influence over the lesser vampire squids like Goldman Sachs and the other mega banks.
Well, of course, Alex, you may invest some money yourself, but I'm sure if you look at the Fortune 500 companies, your investments would not come close to 10%.
And it really is remarkable, Gary, as you look through the Fortune 500, and anybody can do this. You can go to a search engine. You know, who are the largest shareholders in, pick a Fortune 500 company. What you'll find is over and over again, BlackRock up at the top. If not in the number one spot, then number two or number three. And then, of course, there's Vanguard and State Street. And as I point out, those are also huge asset managers. But as I point out in the article, both of those companies are now relying on BlackRock's Aladdin system to manage their risk and to make a lot of their investment decisions. So even though BlackRock only has the $10 trillion, even their competitors are using their systems to allocate capital. So this is very, very dangerous, Gary.
Of course, and you say only $10 trillion. Well, it's hard to imagine that amount of money, but in the article you point out that that is more than the gross domestic product of all but two countries in the world, in the United States, and I believe the other one is China.
That's right. And, that's bigger GDP than the entire continent of Africa. I mean, we're talking an unbelievable amount of money. And when you realize, and that would be scary enough if BlackRock was in the hands of really well-meaning people who were really just interested in maximizing returns for shareholders. But unfortunately, that's not the case with BlackRock. As we show in the article, Larry Fink, the founder and leader of BlackRock, absolutely in bed with the deep state, with the globalists. Of course, he's a leader there. He's on the board of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's on the board of the World Economic Forum, or the World Economic Forum, as Klaus Schwab might put it. He's, of course, a member of the Trilateral Commission. And so this kind of power, $10 trillion under management, would be absolutely terrifying, even if the company was doing what normal people assume companies are going to do, just make money. But that's not what they're doing. In fact, as Larry Fink himself says, we are forcing behavior change. And that's what they're doing. They're taking your money, your 401k, your retirement, your public dollars, right? Your state and local government pension funds, and they're weaponizing that money. They're leveraging that money to, in Larry Fink's words, force change on companies. And of course, companies are abstract ideas, right? They're groups of individuals. So they're not necessarily forcing change on a company so much as they're forcing change on individuals, the customers of that company, the shareholders of that company, the managers and the employees of that company. You know, I don't believe that your average member of a company's board of directors or your average corporate manager, even at the C-suite level, really believes in a lot of this madness that they're promoting. They're doing it to satisfy Larry Fink and BlackRock because they don't want to be ousted at the next shareholder meeting. They don't want to have BlackRock and others divest from their companies and crush the shareholder price, the stock price. So this is just it's hard to overstate the power and the danger that that BlackRock and Larry Fink have over the world.
I'd like to bring up a couple companies, Alex, and actually you mentioned these companies as well as others in your article. But the companies I'd like to bring up are Bud Light and also Target. And, of course, both companies have recently shot themselves in the foot by following policies that most Americans, most of their customers, would disagree with, specifically having to do with transgenderism. and the companies have really paid a price. So how does BlackRock fit into that? Do you think these little squids called Bud Light and Target were simply doing what BlackRock wanted them to do, even though they should have realized that they would be hurting their business?
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you know, we've made this point before in the New American that you know, a lot of these companies that are behaving in this manner, they're not doing it because they think it's going to make them more money. They're not doing it because they think it's going to make them popular with consumers. They're doing it to please Larry Fink and BlackRock, because when you have a shareholder that owns that big of a stake in your company, and you know, BlackRock's always quick to say, well, it's not our money. We don't actually own the shares. We just control them. But you know, the point is the same. They control those shares. And you have this thing called ESG, environmental, social, governance, which we've been reporting on very extensively in the New American since long before everybody else started exposing this. We were really pioneers in exposing this, I think, over a decade ago as the UN was plotting this. But what they do is they say, well, we're not going to invest just based on how much money you're going to make for us. We're not going to invest just based on how much risk a particular asset has with it. We are now going to use this ESG metric. And of course, Larry Fink and BlackRock were the pioneers and certainly the biggest promoters of this. Larry Fink actually clarifies every year, he does his letter to CEOs where he kind of outlines, you know, what he's looking for. But ESG, for anybody who's been living under a rock, no pun intended, it's this idea that companies need to focus on environmental goals. You know, what are they doing to lower their carbon footprint? What are they doing to, you know, improve the environment? What are they doing on the social level, right? Are they promoting enough LGBT couples in their commercials? Are they, you know, having enough diversity on their boards and among their managers? And by diversity, they don't mean like people who think differently, people who might add value in different ways to the company. They mean, you know, what shade is your skin tone? What do you like to do in your bedroom, right? These types of things. It's absolutely ridiculous. And then governance, of course, how is the company managed? So these are really almost, they like to pretend like there's some sort of redeeming value from an investment perspective, but there's really not. In fact, if you look at ESG over the last year in 2022, companies that were heavily focused on ESG and funds that were heavily focused on ESG were divesting from oil, were divesting from energy, and were investing into a bunch of stupid companies that performed very poorly. I forget the numbers off the top of my head, but I think it was something like 20% decline on a lot of the big indexes, especially the ESG focused indexes, whereas a lot of the oil companies, a lot of the energy companies soared by 60%. So if you had your money invested in one of these stupid ESG funds, you took a massive haircut. You lost a bunch of money. If you had your money invested in the things that run counter to the ESG madness, like energy companies, you made a fortune, right? And I own a lot of energy companies, full disclosure. I own quite a bit of Exxon and a lot of the big oil companies. So I was very pleased to see oil doing very well last year. But what BlackRock is doing, and you know, Larry Fink has now distanced himself from this just in the last couple of weeks. He said, well, you know, ESG's kind of got a toxic smell to it, so we're going to stop using that term. But what they were doing was saying to companies, we want you to have a good ESG score. And so companies like Bud Light would then say, well, hey, let's hire a guy pretending to be a woman to be the face of our company, and that'll give us more social points on our ESG score. Or you could have companies like Exxon. Let's give Al Gore more money to buy more stupid carbon credits so he can uproot African villages and replace those villages with trees, and then, you know, everybody will feel better and BlackRock will be more likely to invest money with us. So this is tremendously damaging. At the most basic level, it's an enormous misallocation of capital. It's scarce resources going into counterproductive and useless, if not worse, investments that are eventually going to blow up and not only not produce wealth, but destroy wealth. But on a more more dangerous level, they're turning companies against America. They're turning companies against the traditional family. They're turning companies against their own customer base. So this is terribly devastating. And then you add to that the complication that while American companies are losing market share because of this madness, BlackRock is funneling American capital over to China so that companies owned and operated by the most murderous regime in human history, the Communist Party of China, can continue to make a lot more money and pick up that market share that stupid American companies lost by doing the woke ESG stuff.
And of course, China has its social credit scores that it uses to keep its subjects in line. How would you compare that, Alex, to ESG in the United States?
It's almost an exact parallel, except for right now, at least, we're dealing with social credit scores for companies rather than individuals. But make no mistake, the social credit scores for individuals are in the pipeline already. The big fascist corporations in bed with BlackRock, the Facebooks, the Googles, they're all working on this as we speak. But it's incredibly, incredibly dangerous. What this is doing actually is starving good companies that are truly focused on creating wealth, that are truly focused on adding value, that are truly focused on satisfying the needs and the wants of their customers. It's depriving them of credit, of capital, of investment resources that they need to be able to expand to meet the needs of their customers. And it's allocating that money to companies that are willing to do very stupid things that pollute the culture, that destroy value, that destroy wealth, and that make more room for communist China to come in. So, we need to be very, very wary of all these things. ESG, social credit scores, and all the rest of it. And I do believe that ESG scores, and I'm sure they'll rename it something in the days ahead so that people don't keep using the term ESG, but that's a precursor to ultimately unveiling this for every individual, not just in the United States, but in the world. And I do believe that the CCP dictatorship, the Communist Chinese regime, is kind of running the beta test, the pilot program, if you will, before this gets rolled out worldwide.
Of course, none of this makes any sense in terms of a company operating against the interests of its customers, a company operating against the interests of its investors, unless there's something more involved, something bigger than simply making money for its investors or providing the best services, the best quality product at the best price for its customers. And ultimately, Alex, and of course, you've written a book on it, it really is not comprehensible until you recognize that there is a deep state, that there really is a conspiracy, that there are powerful people in high places in government and business and industry, banking, politics, the media, that are working together for global control.
That's exactly right, Gary. And if you try to understand this just from the perspective of making money, it doesn't make sense, right? And we all saw what happened to Target. I think they lost billions of dollars in market cap over the last few months. So the same thing, Anheuser-Busch and Bud Light are, teetering on the verge of collapse now. I mean, their market share has just absolutely fallen off a cliff. We see Disney. They've lost, I think, $1 billion on their last 10 stupid woke movies. What kind of company would voluntarily lose a bunch of money, right? And we actually have mechanisms in place to hold people accountable for that kind of thing. If you're on a board of directors and you make really stupid decisions that violate your fiduciary obligations to your customers, you can be held, or to your shareholders, you can be held liable for that. So what's happening here doesn't have anything to do with making profit. It has everything to do with the deep state trying to bankrupt and destroy anybody that opposes or stands in the way or is not on board, and trying to build up those players that will do what they're told, which, Larry Fink outlines that every year in his letter to CEOs. And again, Communist China is the model. I do believe they want to destroy American businesses. They want to destroy independent companies, and they want to bring everything into these massive conglomerates in bed with the government, very much along the lines of what the Communist Chinese system has done, a very kind of fascist model where government and big business work together against the interests of the people. And the deep state, as I explain in the book, deep state, the invisible government behind the scenes, we have a whole chapter on how China is kind of the role model for the new world order. That's the system they want to roll out on a global level. And until you understand that this is about more than just making money, none of the stuff makes any sense.
But the good news, Alex, is that the American people are unwilling to accept these woke policies. They're rebelling against it, and it's hurting the companies that advance those policies. Alex, let's give you the final word. Any thoughts about what everyday Americans can do to fight this conspiracy?
Well, on the BlackRock front, there is so much that can be done. First of all, if you have any of your money invested in an ETF managed by BlackRock, get it out, right? If you own any of the iShares or whatever, sell it and find another way to invest your money. You can still own those stocks, just don't let BlackRock manage it for you. It's pretty simple. If your pension is invested through BlackRock or in funds or ETFs managed by BlackRock, get it out of there. If your local government has its pension retirement accounts in a BlackRock account, work with your local officials to have them remove that. Now, if your state government as state money, whether that be, you know, from the budget, from the general treasury fund, or from the state pension system. Talk to your legislators, talk to your state treasurer, if your state has a treasurer or whatever your state calls that position. In Florida, we have a CFO. Tell them that it's completely unacceptable that billions of public dollars are being invested with a woke corporation that is weaponizing our money against us. So on the financial front, those are some very simple things that people can do. And those things are already happening, right? My state of Florida has already divested. We've interviewed for The New American. I've interviewed multiple times Riley Moore, state treasurer of West Virginia, who put together a coalition of almost 20 other state treasurers who put BlackRock on the blacklist, right? We're not going to let you touch our state money, our public money. And BlackRock has lost, I believe, hundreds of billions of dollars from under its management control as a result of these woke policies. And so hopefully that'll just be the first domino to fall and more people will do this. And even just from an investment perspective, I mentioned earlier, if you were invested in these dumb ESG funds that excluded oil, you lost in a massive way in 2022. And that's going to keep happening consistently because the market needs energy, period, end of discussion. There's no reason why only communist China should have electricity and economic production. On a broader scale, of course, if you're not a subscriber yet to the New American magazine, you should be. You should be reading it and then passing it on to your neighbor, your pastor, your city officials, your congressman, whatever the case may be. And then you need to join the John Birch Society, which is the only organization that has been fighting to stop and expose this for over six decades. There's nobody else that's even close. And so, you know, the JBS has been warning about these things for decades. There's a lot of Johnny Come Latelys that have their silver bullet that's going to fix everything. And yet we consistently see those plans peter out and fail. So join the timeless and true and tested organization that has been fighting this and that will continue to fight this going forward.
Thank you very much, Alex. And for our viewers, of course, we encourage you to follow Alex's recommendations and also certainly to read his cover story about BlackRock in the July 31st issue of the New American Magazine.
Freedom is the cure.
You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
To complete today's show, we go to Steve Bonta and Gary Benoit for another episode on principles. Today, they discuss some of the virtues needed for a free society to survive and flourish.
Hello, everybody. This is Gary Benoit, and today with me once again is Steve Bonta, the executive senior editor for The New American Magazine. And of course, Steve, once again, we'll be talking about a basic principle. Now, last week, we talked about the fact that a republic, in order to flourish, has to have citizens who are virtuous. So this week, what we'd like to discuss are some of those virtues to kind of paint a picture of the virtuous man or woman. So what characteristics do you think people need to have in order to preserve freedom?
Okay, well, this is obviously somewhat subjective, but let's talk about a few things. First of all, bear in mind that all popular governments, republics in particular, are going to be nothing more and nothing less than, you know, the composite of the peoples that make them up, right? So whatever, as Bastiat pointed out long ago, whatever is wrong, improper, immoral, or whatever for an individual to do should surely be the same for government to do, because governments derive their powers, the laws derive their force ultimately from the consent of the people. So if I'm giving, delegating some of my personal, some of the rights that inhere in me, as it were, part of that to government, I can't delegate powers to government that I don't have myself. So let's look at some things that are right. In a in a Robinson Crusoe environment, okay, if or maybe I guess we'll put it different, a Lockean environment, sort of a, when John Locke talked about this ideal early state, mm-hmm. of people living as individuals and what sorts of virtues, what sorts of things are inherently right and wrong. Well, number one thing is the right to life. So I don't have the right as an individual to go out and just kill you or kill somebody because I don't like your face or I want to take your stuff or whatever. Maybe I have that right to protect myself from you doing harm to me, but I certainly don't have the right to commit what we call murder.
Right.
So obviously a society must be a society, a virtuous society, in which the right to life is paramount. Care to comment?
Well, I agree completely, but I think it could take that same principle that you just articulated and extend it to other areas. For example, let's take stealing. If I were to put my hand into your pocket, Steve, and take your wallet, and let's say take half your money because for whatever reason I think I deserve it. Now, maybe I would even say, well, Steve, I'm not going to use that money for myself. I'm going to give it to the poor. And I give you back your wallet with only half the money that was there before. That would still be stealing, right? So that would be wrong. But if government does the same thing, even if a majority of people support it, how does that suddenly become right?
It's still wrong, of course.
Right.
And this is a point that Bastiat made so eloquently in his mm-hmm. his book, The Law, right? Is that institutionalized theft, or what he called spoliation, or mm-hmm. what's the word? How's that usually translated into English? Plundering.
Right, legalized plunder.
Legalized plunder mm-hmm. becomes the norm. When people get this idea that, well, you know, government can do stuff that I can't do, but they never ask, okay, well, where did government legitimately get the power to do something that the people can't do in the first place? That, of course, comes from a lack of understanding. But to return to the original principle, I mean, the right to life, obviously, we see there are some real problems with that in the United States today. And they're growing worse. So we've moved from
right.
talking about just abortion to now forms of infanticide, of infants that are born. There are people that are now espousing this openly. Euthanasia of people who have various disabilities has been practiced and is practiced in places today in certain countries
right.
in the world. So a civilized, virtuous society will enshrine human life. I mean, what is the point of having government at all, of having society at all, indeed, if life itself is not protected?
Yeah, right?
The point of having society is to make life better, not to extinguish it. Okay, if in that it would be better to live a Crusoe existence, hardscrabble existence on a desert island, than in the society of people who will take my life away for frivolous purposes. So the right to life. You mentioned the right to property,
right?
Which means that again, in the Lockean sense, whatever you work for, you have a claim on, and can't be legitimately taken away from you. Now there are gray areas like eminent domain that we don't need to get into here that the laws deal with, where sometimes there is a compelling public interest
right.
to a certain extent. But as a general principle, the right to property ought to be sacrosanct. And the reverse side of this is that people themselves need to be honest, refrain from theft,
mm-hmm.
and need to be, how can I say it, worthy
You're right.
of owning property.
Sure. Now you mentioned the word honest, and I think that is a necessary virtue. Just imagine, Steve, if everyone were honest. You think, for example, our politicians in Washington today are honest? And how about that congressman from Long Island, Santos?
George Santos.
George Santos. You know, he's certainly dishonest. And you know what amazes me is that other congressmen point the finger at him and they say, oh my goodness, this is terrible. Look at how dishonest this guy is. He should not even be in Congress. And yet those same congressmen are disobeying their oath to the Constitution routinely by how they vote.
Well, I mean, honesty is certainly a critical virtue. There are we live in what sociologists call a high trust society. That's mm-hmm. actually a term. There are such things as low trust societies. I've lived in several countries that are low trust societies where the default setting is, aside from close family members whom you know
okay.
intimately, you don't trust anyone. You assume that everyone
right.
has an angle, that everyone has
yeah.
an agenda, and you treat in your business dealings and other sure. other interactions, you treat people accordingly.
Well, once upon a time in this country, business dealings could be, in fact, they were conducted or they were brought about on the basis of a handshake. And I can't imagine people doing that today.
No, I mean, part of the reason that we've become, that we as a society have lawyered up mm-hmm. collectively and have become so litigious and are terrified of offending right. one another and are worried about lawsuits is because as we become more and more degraded morally and our honest and honesty ceases to become a dominant virtue, we are evolving into a low trust society, just like they have in the likes of India or China or the Middle East or large swaths of Africa and so mm-hmm. forth. I mean, societies can still function, but you can't have a free republic for very long right. under conditions of low trust.
Now, on the other hand, if everyone were completely honest, I would think most of the problems in the world would disappear.
Most of them would. I would suspect that government would have very little left to do other than right. sort of decide, where roads yep. should be built or something like yep. that. I mean, you still might have disagreements and things like that. But yeah, honesty, if we had a thoroughly honest society, the world would change dramatically for the better. So honesty is a pivotal virtue. And it has been shown. I mean, one of the points that the critics of the Roman Empire pointed out was the decay in moral values, and honesty was one of them, that in the Roman Republic, people, again, a man's word was his bond and all right. that kind of thing. Obviously, you don't want to over-idealize it. There have always been scoundrels out there and this kind of thing, but mm-hmm. it's certainly true. We still, in our society, it's taboo to call someone a liar. Right. That's right. That's a debate stopper. Are you calling me a liar? Oh, no, I wasn't doing that. I just said I didn't think you were maybe quite telling them, but I didn't call you a liar. Oh, no. So we still have that taboo that's right. left over from this honor that we used to have that,
right.
if you tell me something, it's the truth. And my default assumption is that you're telling me the truth until you give me ample reason to suppose otherwise. These things do matter at the level of the body politic because right. they affect not only the types of people who get into office, okay, it also affects then the types of law,
right.
laws that they're going to pass.
Before we wrap up, Steve, there's one more virtue I'd like to mention specifically, and that is the virtue of courage or bravery. And, once upon a time, not too many years ago, people, I'm sure, felt in this country like they could openly express their beliefs. But that's not so much true today in today's woke society. And it takes a lot of courage today for people to speak out.
Well, we call ourselves the land of the free and the home of the
brave.
Brave. And, right. and those aren't just pleasant lyrics to a song. They're actually reflective of a cultural trait that Americans have long had, this bravery and boldness. Right. And in some cultures, you don't yep. see, you see, there's a pusillanimity that we don't have.
I just don't see how freedom can survive without this courage or this bravery. But thank God, Steve, there are still millions of Americans who are willing to speak out regardless of the consequences.
Yes.
And I can see those Americans making the difference as to whether in the future our republic is restored or if freedom is lost. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The New American TV. And remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. Have a good rest of the day, and we will see you tomorrow.